Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Across the country, state governments are staring into a fiscal abyss, billions, tens of billions in deficits, and mandates to balance budgets. In the stimulus bill that President Obama signs today, the amount of aid slated for ailing states was slashed by the Senate, partly restored by the House. It's less than governors wanted, less than economists say is needed to stimulate recovery. Meanwhile, state workers are being laid off, and things could get worse fast. This hour on Point, the states and the stimulus. You can join our conversation. What goes and what does your situation look like in your state? Where do you want that money to go? Joining me first this hour from Sacramento, California, is Evan Halper. He's Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Evan, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Jane.
So the numbers tell the story, Evan, over $40 billion deficit in California. How much will the federal stimulus money help?
Well, the federal stimulus money will account for about $9 to $10 billion of that $40 billion. So we're still left with quite a large deficit, making up nearly a third of our state general fund even after the stimulus money is accounted for.
And so these massive problems then looming, how deep will the cuts be now, even after the money flows?
They're incredibly deep. I mean, there's really no area of state government that's not touched by them.
And can you give us some examples? I mean, I'm reading in the paper this morning, 20,000 workers losing their jobs, 275 state-funded public works projects put on hold. I mean, what's happening?
Well, those are the things that are being done right now because there's no budget, because the state's actually running out of cash since there hasn't been any action taken to wipe out this deficit. And, of course, government spending needs to continue. If the budget is passed this week, then the layoffs won't happen that you're reading about, and those construction projects will get started again, but there'll be deep and long-lasting cuts to schools, for example, to healthcare programs. Higher education will take a big cut. Pretty much anything government does, the state workers are being told to take at least a day off per month without pay. There's all kinds of borrowing that the state's going to need to do to cover its deficit.
Talk about that budget being worked on in California. GOP lawmakers have taken an anti-tax pledge. Is there a stalemate on that order?
Yeah, absolutely. The governor called the first emergency session to address this deficit back in November. We're now 104 days into the emergency session. Actually, it's been three separate emergency sessions just because the way the calendar works in the Constitution, they've needed to reset them separate times. And because every Republican in California, in the California legislature, but one has signed this pledge never to raise taxes, and they haven't been able to figure out a way to do this without any taxes at all, even with the federal money, we just haven't been able to pass a budget. We need a two-thirds majority in California to pass a budget, and that means three Republicans in the Senate and three Republicans in the Assembly. And they've rounded up about five, but they can't get that sixth vote, and it's proven elusive. The legislature was in lockdown all night, Saturday night into Sunday, and it's looking like that could happen again tonight.
So might California be looking to the federal government for future financial relief?
Well, the federal government, has pretty much decided what it's doing, and it's going to send in about $10 billion this way, and the rest we're on our own. The state can't print money, as you know, and they've got to do something through a mix of cuts and perhaps tax increases. And if the votes aren't there for tax increases, then you've just got to start shutting some parts of the government down.
Evan Halper in Sacramento, the Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Evan, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Scott Pattison. He's the executive director of the National Association of State Budget Officers and former budget officer of the state of Virginia. Scott Pattison, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
We just heard what's going on in California. Give us the big picture here. How bad are the budget shortfalls in most states across this country?
Well, very bad. And as you could suspect from the fact that the economy is in such bad shape, that it's going to be reflected in state budgets, and their revenues have been declining precipitously, especially since September. And we've estimated by looking at the data that you could see shortfalls to the tune of $250 billion over a three-fiscal-year period. Mm. And quite a few states have already had, to the tune of, in the aggregate, tens of billions of dollars in shortfalls already.
There are important distinctions, Scott, to be made between state governments and the federal government in terms of deficit spending, which is why the stimulus package and this money is so important for states right now. Can you broadly explain what states can't do?
Sure. I think the easiest way is, and Evan made a good comment that he said states can't print money. And the bottom line is states are not national governments. They don't have control over the currency or interest rates. And therefore, they pretty much have to balance their budgets. Every state but one is required by law or constitution to do so. And so they can do some debt financing and some debt spending, but it's fairly limited. So they just, the way I put it is, they don't have many tools in their toolbox to deal with the budget that you might have at the national level that the federal government has.
How is this federal stimulus money distributed, Scott, across the state level? Is it based on need? Is it population? What is it?
Well, it's a mix. And the stimulus funds are divided into numerous pots of money, which should help because there's a diversity of the funding. It goes from everything for, there's money for health care and Medicaid, there's money for K-12, there's money for transportation and infrastructure. One thing I want to point out, though, is that the general fund shortfalls, which is based on the revenue that comes into the states from the income and sales and corporate income taxes, mm-hmm. is not necessarily covered by some of these funds. A lot of these funds are specifically earmarked for particular specific purposes and therefore won't help with the shortfall.
So with those earmarks in mind, then, how much discretion will states have in the way they use their stimulus money?
They will have some, and it certainly will help, and it's going to help in a couple of ways. First of all, by providing the K-12 funding, that's certainly helpful. The transportation infrastructure is welcome in that it should help with the employment situation in a lot of states. And then the Medicaid and healthcare funding should be sufficient to help with that area. The good and the bad is that there will still be shortfalls in a lot of states that they're going to have to deal with, particularly, again, on their general fund side, which is what the money is used for in terms of K-12, prisons, law enforcement, pretty critical needs.
And so is it possible then that states will need another round or two of stimulus money?
We'll see. I don't want to sound ungrateful on behalf of the states. We're very pleased to be getting this money, and this is definitely a situation where you would have had particularly draconian, painful spending cuts and perhaps tax increases that will be alleviated by the stimulus funding. So you're still going to see cuts and you're still going to see possibly tax increases, but they certainly won't be as bad as they otherwise would be. And we have to see how the economy improves over the next year, and that should make a positive difference.
Well, talk more about that. How quickly might we see the impact of the stimulus at the state level?
You're going to see the funds go out pretty quickly. I'm very intrigued. There have been jokes over the years about how slow government can be, but I can tell you the intent based on this particular stimulus legislation is to get the money out quick. And that message has been heard at the local and the state level. And I can guarantee you that governors and other officials are moving pretty quickly to get the money out to contractors for transportation or out for other important projects such as water quality. So I suspect it will get out fairly quickly, and I think that's certainly a positive thing.
You do? You think spending money quickly is the smartest way to go?
It depends. There are two parts to this. The first part is quickly is definitely over a matter of a few weeks and months, and that certainly will assist the states and the economy. Again, if it's spent efficiently, and I'm fairly confident compared to some other instances such as Katrina, that all of the parties are aware this time of how critical it is to ensure that not only is the money spent quickly, but that the money is spent appropriately. And I know, for example, our group of budget officers is working heavily with state comptrollers and auditors and procurement officials and CIOs across the country to upfront ensure that the money is spent appropriately. We don't want to find out problems post-audit. We want to try to avoid any of the problems pre-audit.
You've been getting a lot of calls the last few days from state budget offices. What sorts of questions are they asking you?
The biggest questions, I think, are how do they comply properly with the legislation? As you know, there are pages and pages of in this legislation. There are a lot of requirements, and I know that states want to make sure that they follow those specifically. And I think the other issue here is that the state officials have told me that they're very interested in making sure that they follow the transparency requirements. This particular legislation is fairly unique in that it has some very specific requirements about transparency, about explaining how the money is spent, and also performance measures about how many jobs are created by certain funds. And all of that's positive, but there are a lot of problems with ensuring that the data is provided and the information in the reports is put together timely and accurately.
I imagine there was huge internal competition for the money at the state level.
I've heard that. People are telling me that they're getting a lot of calls from citizens as well as legislators and others. And, of course, everybody has a good idea of how they want the money spent. I've cautioned folks, though, at the state level to realize that the legislation's pretty specific. So while there's some discretion at the state level, the money for K-12 has to stay within K-12. The money for transportation is for transportation.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour about state budgets. Can the federal stimulus package bail them out? Scott Pattison is with us. He's executive director of the National Association of State Budget Officers. I'd like to hear on tape now from one governor. We checked in California earlier at the top of the broadcast. In his State of the State address last month, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger painted a dire picture of the state's massive budget crisis.
The truth is that California is in a state of emergency. Addressing this emergency is the first and most important and greatest thing that we must do for the people of California. The $42 billion deficit is a rock upon our chest that we cannot breathe until we get it off.
From California to Wisconsin now, let's check in with Governor Jim Doyle. Governor Doyle released his budget for Wisconsin yesterday, and he's been a leading voice in pressing for more aid to states in the final stimulus package. Governor Doyle, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you for having me, Jane.
Nice to have you with us. Are you happy, sir, with the amount of money your state and others are getting from the federal government?
Well, I don't know if happy is the right word. I think that the federal government, the President Obama's administration and Congress really did help enormously. They helped out. It is not their responsibility to entirely relieve us. We obviously are going to have to still make very, very deep cuts. But because of what the President and Congress did, we will not have to just make draconian cuts, particularly in education and health care. We have a strong educational system in Wisconsin, and we were really looking at a possible 10-15% cuts. Mm. We were looking at cuts to the university that could exceed 25% that would put tuition so high it would be out of reach. And we're a state now that's first, second, or third in the country in terms of the number of people covered with health insurance, and we were looking at having to remove children from health insurance and have seniors pay more for prescription drugs. And because of the help the federal government's given us, we are going to be able to keep our nose above water. And while all of those areas, healthcare, education, are going to take cuts, are going to have to do more with less, they are not going to have to just see the kind of just devastating cuts that would harm us for decades to come.
You've been rallying other governors throughout this process, pushing for changes to the federal stimulus bill, trying to get more money from the federal government. Originally, the bill was $79 billion allocated for states. The Senate slashed it to $39 billion. The final bill is now $59 billion allocated for states. Can you describe what the process of vying for this money on the state level was like?
Well, we have a great champion here who comes from Wisconsin, Dave Obey, who is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. And I actually, the day after the election, I went to Congressman Obey's home in home office in Wausau, Wisconsin, and we sat down and talked about what it was the state was really looking at and what the, how devastating this would be. And Chairman Obie, I think together with other members of the House, really understood that. And I worked very closely with him, as did other governors throughout this. We also had two very strong senators, Senators Feingold and Cole. So we had good support in Wisconsin for what we were trying to get done. And again, I think where they ended up was a reasonable place to be.
How much pressure was there on you, Governor, and other governors to prove that you had shovel-ready projects ready to go to stimulate your state economy?
Oh, there was a lot, as there should have been. I mean, if the purpose of this bill, the stimulus part of this bill, is to get people to work and get them to work quickly, I think Congress very appropriately was asking us a lot of tough questions about could we really do that. I appeared before the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and was grilled by members, I think appropriately, about exactly what we could do and could we get it ready to go. We've been working very, very hard now for, well, probably 6 weeks of making sure that our projects are ready, that and that we can put the stimulus money to work immediately, get people back to work, and get them working on projects that will add value to the state.
Well, Governor Jim Doyle, Democratic Governor of Wisconsin, thank you for your time today, sir, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Scott Patterson, you just heard from Governor Doyle. Will this money help states long term? Is this a temporary fix? Something in between?
Well, if the revenue starts to return over the next few years, once the economy returns and recovers, and one certainly hopes that that's going to be the case, then this gets us through the hardest time. If we have really tough economic times for two or three more years, then unfortunately this will be short term, and states will continue to have significant declines in their revenue and have to make up for it. So a lot is very dependent on how quickly the economy recovers.
Let's bring some listeners in to our conversation here. Jeff is on the line first from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to On Point. Thanks for waiting.
No problem, Jane. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Go ahead.
Well, I have a question. It was mentioned earlier that 49 out of the 50 states have either state law or it's in the Constitution that their budget must be balanced, mm-hmm. and I know for a fact that Rhode Island is the same. My question has always been, if the budget isn't balanced, what is the legal repercussion? One usually thinks if you violate the law, somebody goes to jail or there's a fine. I certainly don't think the governor is going to be handcuffed and hauled off to prison if he doesn't balance the budget. Mm. So my question is, what is the ramification if a state doesn't balance the budget? And in these tough times, if they don't balance it this year, maybe it will help with next year. What exactly would the repercussion be?
Jeff, thank you. It's a great question. Scott Patterson?
Well, that is a great question, and there are several answers. Of course, the 50 states have different requirements. I know when I worked in Virginia, we required every department and agency head to sign a legal document that they could not spend over their appropriation, and they would be removed if they did. So there was a personnel involvement ensuring that you would keep the appropriations balance. But that being said, the bond rating agencies would certainly downgrade or at least put on credit watch states that did not follow those guidelines. And I also think there would be significant political ramifications for states that did not follow the law. But again, it would depend. Every statute, I've certainly read them, but the statutes and the constitutions across the country have very different requirements, and they define balanced budget differently.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now. Joining us also from Madison, Wisconsin, is Menzie Chin. He's a professor of public affairs and economics at the University of Wisconsin, served on the White House Council of Economic Advisors from 2000 to 2001. He blogs at econbrowser.com. Menzie Chin, welcome to On Point.
Good to be here, Jane.
Thank you. To your mind, are states getting a big enough piece of the federal stimulus?
Well, let me just say that the stimulus package, it could have been bigger and better in many respects. In my mind, it would have been smarter to have a bigger allocation to the states.
Why?
I guess given the challenges that the economy is facing, the answer is no. It would have been better to have a bigger overall stimulus plan.
Well, tell us why, Chin. Why?
Well, first of all, we're looking at a recession, according to the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, that's going to be as deep as the 1980-82 recessions. and it's going to be more persistent. And so we're looking at some a reduction of output below what the economy could usually produce that's pretty unprecedented in modern times. It's quite substantial. And so even this, what is sometimes called a massive stimulus bill, is, you know, at its peak, no more than spending like 2.5% of GDP, you know, if I want to put it in proportions. And that's just not enough to get the economy up to what it could produce.
So what would have been the right amount? What would have been the right amount to give to states?
Well, I'd say, you know, to the states, if we kept something more to what was in the original House bill for what was going to be transferred to the states, that would have been better. Okay, so instead of the roughly $60 billion is the number I just heard, if it had been closer to $80 billion, at least that would have mitigated the immediate impact, negative impact, on the state's budget balances. And the state's budget balances are really important because when the states don't get revenue, then they have to cut back, essentially, on their spending. And that just exacerbates the overall problem of a downturn in the economy. You're sort of pulling away spending exactly at a time when you need to have spending going on in the economy.
Scott Patterson, let me jump in. Professor Chin, what do you make of what the professor just said?
Well, yeah, that's the biggest problem. And I know when we were talking to people on the Hill, we explained that. We said the consequences of not providing aid to the states is that we, because we have to balance our budgets, we have to cut spending, in some cases rather significantly, or we have to raise taxes, or both. So he's absolutely right. Those are the consequences, and that's why stimulus and the more stimulus funds are helpful in preventing that occurrence.
Let's bring some more callers into the conversation who have questions for both of you gentlemen. First, Heather is on the line. She's in Augusta, Georgia. Heather, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank
Hi.
You.
Thank you.
I have more of a comment than a question.
Okay.
You constantly hear about the state lawmakers not unable to balance budgets and get together and get everything moving, so that instead they lay off the state workers. And my thought is, why not suspend their pay or, you know, cut some of them until they can get together and get budgets working again?
Mm. Heather, thanks. Professor Chin, how about
My guess is that the pay of the state legislatures is a drop in the bucket. If I heard the comment correctly, I mean, that might provide the right incentives, but still, you can see that some of the ideological divides are so big in some of these legislatures that I'm not even sure that sort of stress would induce them to come to an agreement. It's just plain hard. You know, some people think you should never raise taxes, and as a consequence, if they're running into people who are saying, I can't cut the police or the fire services, well, you know, then you're stuck for a while until people are moved by whatever's happening in the economy to some sort of compromise.
In this process, Scott Patterson, should we be worried about pet projects, as they're called, as we do at the federal level, as this money is being handed out to states, lots of it, very quickly?
Well, fortunately, there are fairly strict guidelines about reporting what the money's being spent on. And again, it's rather unprecedented, the degree to which there are those requirements. So I think that certainly helps. And also, a lot of the, as I've mentioned, the pots of money are fairly specifically earmarked. And so it's kind of hard to manipulate those as pet projects. But I think the other thing, though, is, frankly, times are bad enough, these shortfalls for states are bad enough, that the money has got to go right to these programs such as K-12, Medicaid, and make up for these other shortfalls in law enforcement budgets and so forth. So I think, frankly, there's a lot of money coming from the stimulus, but the shortfalls are so significant to make up for that there will still be cuts and possibly tax increases. So I think the incentive is pretty strong to avoid those very specific earmarks or pet projects.
Here's another call now. Bob is in New London, Connecticut. Hi, Bob. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering, the stimulus we're talking about, my wife and I have been talking about, is it going to affect the homeowner? Is it going to, specifically, is it going to affect us where we're going to see some benefit from it? Or is it just basically the state governments and big business?
Mm. Good question, Bob. Scott Patterson, is this money going to help people who really need it, homeowners, average folks, paying their mortgages, or is it going to go to big businesses?
Well, there's a lot of talk now about some other particular action taken to the federal government regarding specifically homeowners and mortgages and that type of thing. There are some provisions, for example, though, for weatherization for lower-income homeowners. So there are some provisions that would assist homeowners. But as far as the foreclosure and real estate crisis issue, there's nothing directly related to that in the particular legislation, although I'm assuming, and we should ask the economist, that the stimulus funds will help, hopefully, in the overall economy, which will at least indirectly assist in the housing area.
Yeah, I think I exactly agree with that. You know, the best projections say that, you know, let's say the middle range, you're going to shave off a percentage point of unemployment as a consequence of the stimulus bill for the next 3 years. Doesn't sound like a lot, but 1% is a big number in with respect to unemployment rates that are projected in the absence of a stimulus bill to hit something like close to 9% by 2010. Mm. So to the extent that you got more people employed and not unemployed, you're going to have more people able to stay in their houses so that those houses aren't foreclosed upon and entering into a big inventory of foreclosed houses, which would drive house prices down. You know, and so I think that indirect effect is definitely there. Mm. It does highlight the fact that this stimulus bill is not a fix-all. It relates to that point made earlier, you know, how fast will the economy recuperate or recover, and that depends a large part upon what's done in the financial sector with this financial sector rescue plan.
Back to the phones now. Jason is calling from Muscatine, Iowa. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the program. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, Jane. No problem.
Hi.
I might be missing something, but easy case. Let's say a state has their K through 12 money covered but needs money to build bridges. All they get from the federal government, for whatever reason, is K through 12 money. Couldn't they just switch their own money over from K through 12 to build bridges?
Hmm. Good question, Jason. Scott, should states just be able to set their own priorities based on their own needs?
There is a very significant restrictions on being able to do that in the particular bill. We use the term in budgeting supplanting, and I know obviously some of that will occur. And frankly, some of that is good because the individual state may have spent quite a bit of money on one particular area, and it makes sense to put it in another. But for example, in the K through 12 area, the money is specifically restricted for that, and if there is additional money in excess of what the state needs to maintain a certain level of funding, that K through 12 money goes to the local school districts. So it would be very difficult to supplant that particular money. But money is fungible in the sense that it certainly will help overall in the state to have these Medicaid and health care funds. You do have about $8.8 billion in the aggregate that will go for any critical need at the state level, and I suspect a lot of that will go for law enforcement and other issues.
I only have about 30 seconds before our next break. Will this money be tracked by the federal government, Scott, or once it's given to the states, it's theirs to spend?
It will be tracked. The states actually, the governors are required to apply for this money, so they don't just automatically get it, and they're required to provide very detailed quarterly reports to the federal government as to how the money will be spent, and it will be on recovery.gov.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about whether the stimulus package can save the states and our economy. We're talking with Scott Pattison, the executive director of the National Association of State Budget Officers, and Menji Chin, professor of public affairs and economics at the University of Wisconsin. Professor Chin, let me ask you about state aid versus tax cuts. Is state aid the best way in your mind to stimulate the economy as opposed to a broad-reaching tax cut?
Well, let's apply the criteria that's been quoted from both sides of the aisle for a stimulus to be effective. It's got to be timely, targeted, and temporary. So in terms of timeliness, you might say a tax cut in general might be more timely. You could get it out to the populace more rapidly. But I think given the fact that the states, from what I've been able to see in Wisconsin, have been preparing, the state governments have been preparing to spend this money ahead of time, given the big budget shortfalls, I think the stimulus will be timely. In terms of targeted, what's true is that in general economic theory suggests that a multiplier effect, you know, the sort of impact on the overall economy from tax cuts is usually less than that what you would get from spending on goods and services. And to the extent that a good chunk of what the states will be doing is spending on goods and services, you know, hiring teachers, keeping firemen and policemen on the job, there, too, in general, it's going to be the case that transfers to the state that are in turn spent are going to have a bigger impact on the economy than broad-based tax cuts. Mm. Now, there could be cases where tax cut to, let's say, to very low-income individuals or households and or tax rebates and so forth might have a bigger effect dollar for dollar than general government spending at the state level. But I suspect, in general, given how the money's been allocated, that's not going to be the case. Mm. So in terms of timeliness and targeted, getting the biggest bang for the buck, I think it makes sense to give a lot of the funds to states.
Is there a potential, Scott Patterson, for the federal government, for federal spending to in some way overpower the state's ability to invigorate their own economies? I mean, I'm thinking about the federal government spending money on infrastructure projects. Can those projects, those federal projects, still stimulate the economy at the state level?
Oh, yes. Any of the activity that will be occurring in the particular state will create the economic activity. So it certainly will be welcome, whatever additional federal activity takes place on top of what the stimulus funds are earmarked for.
Kathy is on the line now from Littleton, Massachusetts. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
My question is about what specifically is in the K-12 education part of the stimulus package, other than shovel-ready projects, which will be jobs primarily for men. So my question is, where in K-12 education will be the jobs for women?
Gender equity. I hear your point, Kathy, very clearly. Thank you. Professor Chin, Scott Patterson, do you have a response? Scott?
Well, yeah, this is Scott. I would say that because the infrastructure money is separate, there is some bond provisions for school construction too. But because most of the K-12 money is specifically earmarked for going to local school districts, that I don't think there's a gender equity issue regarding that. The basic requirement of the funds that are coming for K-12 are to prevent cuts from the previous year's level. So those funds are going right to the school districts. So these are going for teachers and right into the classroom. That's the intent.
What do you think, Professor Chin? Kathy says most of these shovel-ready projects, as she sees them, are directed and targeted toward men.
Well, I guess to the extent that they're the funds that are devoted to infrastructure, which is, as Scott mentions, specific in the bill, that's going to be oriented, I guess, towards more male employment. On the other hand, that's right. I think the K-12 money is separate, and that's for making it such that you're not firing all these teachers. Now, I don't know what the distribution across the genders amongst the teachers are and the school supervisors and so forth, but I suspect that it's not as disproportionate as an infrastructure. So it's a pretty big pot of money that's going for K-12 support. So I think that on that count, you shouldn't be worrying about gender inequality.
To Watertown, Massachusetts now, where Rot is on the line. Hi, Rot. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you very much. My name is Rot Ketasinga, and I live in Watertown. I'd participated in this conversation halfway through, so I'm not quite sure whether the guest speakers have already addressed my question.
Let's hear it.
And it seems to me that both speakers are focused heavily on public finance. Mm-hmm. And in the macroeconomic model, there are, of course, the private sector and the government sector. And the general belief is whether or not the government sector is as good as the private sector. as the stimulator of the economy. And I would like to hear Professor Chin's and Dr. Peterson's attitude about whether or not the government is as good as a stimulator as the private sector.
Thank you. Rod, Professor Chin, your response first.
Well, first, let me make emphasize the point that what we're doing, what the stimulus bill is doing is it's not trying to put more of the economy under government control or, you know, having actual production take place within the government and state enterprises. It's essentially providing funds to be spent. And, you know, you're going to be hiring private contractors to build the bridges. You're going to be hiring private individuals or keeping private individuals teaching in the schools. They, in turn, are going to do what? With that income that they would have lost in the absence of a stimulus, they're going to have income that they can go out to the stores to shop and to buy groceries and so forth, which in turn becomes income for somebody else and for the store company and so forth. And that circulates and recirculates through the economy so that the bulk of the jobs that are they're kept as a consequence of the stimulus are not in government. They're in the private sector. So to that extent, I don't think that the question about whether the government's better at making things or doing things is quite relevant. The other point is that we're in a particular time where, in some sense, some of the workings of the private sector have fallen apart, in particular the financial sector. And so you might say, in general, in normal times, yes, the private sector is better at doing lots and lots of things in the economy. But at certain instances, the private sector hits a wall and can't coordinate itself to recover and to undertake the normal economic transactions that occur in an economy. And so who has to step in? It's the government. You could just wait for things to right themselves, and that would be 1929 to 32.
Mm-hmm. Scott Patterson, what's your response? Do you trust the government or the private sector to stimulate
well,
the economy?
Well, I think it is often overlooked, and I'm glad the caller brought this up, that a lot of these funds actually go to the private sector. For example, you have tens of billions of dollars in the Medicaid funds, and almost all of those are basically paid out to doctors, hospitals, nurses, et cetera, in the healthcare system. The infrastructure, as Professor Chin pointed out, that's funding that goes to private contractors for building bridges and roads and so forth. So a surprising amount of this money actually goes out to private firms and hospitals and other private entities.
Back to the phones now. I want to get more callers in here. Richard is on the line from Bradford, Vermont. Hi, Richard. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I work for the state of Vermont in one of the rest areas, and as of the 27th of this month, I'll be losing my job with the rest area because someone else has more seniority in one of the other ones that are that have closed. And I want to know if these monies will help me soon get my job back.
Richard, good luck to you. Thanks for the call. Scott Patterson, what do you think?
It depends on each individual state and how they spend basically their flexible funds. There is, in the aggregate, nearly $9 billion in flexible funds. And if some of those are used, for example, in the state of Vermont to offset those cuts in parks and recreation or rest areas and so forth, that might assist with that. So really, it's a good example of how there is still some flexibility in these funds. I would say if he were working in the healthcare and Medicaid or the K through 12 field, it would be almost certain that because they have to keep their spending back to last year's levels, that he would probably keep his job. But when it's other areas of the government, it may be different.
To Nashville, Tennessee now. Phil is on the line. Hi, Phil. Welcome to the program with Scott Patterson and Professor Menzi Chin.
Hello. Yes, my question was about not so much the nuts and bolts of how these dollars are spending, but why there's so much confidence that it's actually going to stimulate the economy at all. I think the clearest historical examples of government deficit spending to try to stimulate an economy in a recession being the U.S., the New Deal, and Japan in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. The government deficit spending, if anything, didn't help, and if anything, seems to have prolonged the recession.
Mm. Phil, thanks. Professor Chin, have we learned our lesson historically about deficit spending? Will it work this time?
Well, I agree that there's some disagreement about the magnitude of the effect of deficit spending, and in particular, you know, a stimulus bill like this. But I think there might be an alternative reading of, for instance, the Japanese experience. And let me just say, you know, nobody's saying that the stimulus bill on its own is going to do the job. Most economists believe that GDP or economic output will be higher in the with the stimulus bill than without. But it's not enough. I mean, you've got to get the financial system fixed. And, you know, and the two things are interlinked. Fixing the financial system without the stimulus bill would probably not work. Fixing the doing a stimulus bill without the fixing the financial system, well, that might be exactly Japan. So we're not saying that this is the be-all and end-all. I would take issue with the caller's interpretation of the Great Depression. I don't know where he's coming from. I mean, the majority of academic treatments of the Great Depression would argue, economic treatments would say that there was a stimulus that came from the various plans. And if you look at the actual trajectory of economic output during the Great Depression, there's a good bit of evidence that, you know, the policies, both monetary and fiscal policies, worked to help the economy recover. And it wasn't until you get a super large fiscal stimulus in the form of fighting World War II that you actually get fully out of the Great Depression.
Duxbury, Massachusetts is where Jack is on the line. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you for your contribution to our country during this crisis, as well as that of On Point.
Thank you.
I have three comments I'd like to make, three specific topics I'd like to touch on.
Okay.
And I welcome criticism and comment. The first has to do with the fact that it is my opinion, and I believe that of any one who's paying attention and is rational, that the Republican leadership is utterly committed to seeing that this stimulus package fail and to lay the blame on Mr. Obama and the Democrats in the same way that they laid the blame on Truman for losing China. It is almost despairing that they appear to be unable to act in a responsible manner faced with this problem, and a particular problem in California where there is all of the Republicans and one in particular who are holding up a budget package for their $42 billion deficit is just really deplorable. The second issue I'd like to raise is that I despair that so many of my fellow citizens, and in particular our elected leadership and the major leaders of our largest companies and many of the smaller companies, don't seem to understand that it's time for us to start paying our bills instead of borrowing from the future as we have for 50 years. We are all going to have to pay more taxes in order to deal with this. It's either that or return to a level of society that we can't even begin to call civilization.
So time to pay more taxes. I hear your point, and your first one is taken as well. Jack, we're running out of time. Thanks for your call. I want to get a couple more in here. Jim is on the line from Rockport, Massachusetts. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the program.
I'm pleased with hearing this program. I have two points. The response of our general citizenship. When World War II showed itself, there was a sense of patriotism that we're involved in the support of our society for obviously a certain cause. I don't feel quite that response, that buildup of a sense of consciousness that we have to do for ourselves. And I'm also aware that during the Depression, labor unions tended to say it is our time to take a 5 or 10% cutback so that more of the resources can be shared with more of the citizens of our great nation. I wish to have someone comment about these two statements of mine.
Jim, thank you. Scott Patterson, I'll leave that to you. Our time is short, as you know.
Yes, I think that across the country, the more that citizens are involved in this process, I think it's a positive thing. And I think everybody does agree that they kind of have to roll up their sleeves and be part of the solution, whether they're a citizen or they're actually in government. And I know that's why I know I'm impressed with the transparency and the reporting provisions in this particular legislation, simply because we have to say how we're spending the money, and it is going to be reported on websites, both at the state level and at the federal level. And I think that's a positive step among many that we hope will occur over the next few years.
Scott, is there concern, a worry that states will just save this federal stimulus money and not spend it?
There was concern at the beginning of the putting together the package of the stimulus legislation, but that's no longer the case, partly because a lot of the funds are earmarked. There are specific restrictions, for example, under Medicaid, that it cannot be saved. And frankly, for almost every state, their economic and revenue situation is so bad, they really don't have the ability to save it. They really are going to have to prevent further draconian cuts or tax increases. And so I'm not concerned that states will just be able to sock this away and save it, even if they wanted to.
Menzie Chin, I'll give you the last word as a professor of economics. Are you optimistic about the state's situation across the country with these budget shortfalls and this injection of federal stimulus money?
Well, I'm guardedly optimistic. I think the stimulus package is going to help out in both direct means by transferring funds to the state, which I think they'll very definitely use, if I can observe from Madison. And indirectly, you know, it'll push up the state of the economy a little bit. Not all the way by any means. There's going to be a lot of hard decisions coming down the way, and there's going to be a lot of pain. There'll be a lot of cuts, and at that juncture, we may see a demand for further action. We'll see.
Menzie Chin joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the University of Wisconsin. Professor, thank you so much for your time and perspective.
Thank you.
Scott Patterson from Washington, D.C., Executive Director of the National Association of State Budget Officers, also served as State Budget Officer for Virginia. Scott, thank you for your time and your very articulate examples and explanations. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
All right. You can continue the conversation, listeners, and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.